You will never, ever leave this godforsaken time. 9. The shock snapped, leaving only a pool of anger in the pit of her stomach. Etta lunged toward Cyrus, only to be caught around the waist by Nicholas and hauled backward, still struggling. You bastard! Miss Spencer! Nicholas's arms tightened, trying to hold her still. Etta! At the pleading note in his tone, she stopped struggling, sagging against the tight band of his arms. Cyrus stood, studying her face more closely as he circled around them.
I thought, actually, that you might be in Ironwood, that Augustus had made another folly, but I see now I'm wrong. You don't bear our stamp at all. Who is your father?
As if I'd ever tell you, she snarled back. He gave a dismissive wave, turning to a trunk near the bed.
It hardly matters, seeing as it's clearly not Ironwood, Jacaranda, or Hemlock.
Sophia had said there were three other families who could travel, Lyndon included. But she and Nicholas had both also said that the other families were gone now, or had been forcibly merged into the Ironwood clan.
Your mother was the last living traveler of the Lyndon line, until we learned of you.
Cyrus found what he was looking for in the depths of the trunk and pulled it out. He held it out for her to take, and only then did Nicholas release his hold on her. It was a small, leather-bound book, embossed with the initials RCL, and a gorgeous golden tree. Etta found her eyes tracing the shape of it over and over, the slight curve of the trunk, the branches that stretched and twined until they disappeared into the heavy, full body of leaves. The roots of the golden tree were similarly interwoven, the thin lines weaving in and out of each other's paths.
You don't recognize it, do you?
Ironwood said, clearly amused by this.
Your mother and her grandfather, Benjamin Lyndon, were so blasted proud of their heritage. It's your family's sigil.
Each house has a tree sigil, Nicholas said quietly when she looked up for confirmation.
He nodded at the chest, its lid emblazoned with a magnificent, strong-armed tree, its thick branches so low that they seemed to rise directly from the ground. Her grandfather. Her mother had told her she'd been raised by her grandfather. So then, everything wasn't a lie. Just a carefully crafted truth.
We crossed paths with Rose, sightseeing in Renaissance Italy. It seemed quite the happy accident at the time, as our grandfather had recently passed, and she found herself alone, he continued, something accusing in his gaze. I'd made the necessary arrangements to bring her into our family, to marry Augustus and rescue her from a life alone. But your mother disappeared 17 years ago, and we've been searching for her ever since.
Her hands clenched around the book until she couldn't resist opening it. She flipped the cover open, scanning the neat notations, all in her mother's handwriting. It felt like opening a random door and finding her waiting there. Victorian London, Rome in the 5th century, Egypt in the early 20th. There must have been 100 different places listed, all with small journal entries like, saw the Queen as she and the Prince rode past us on their way to Buckingham Palace, and the camel nearly ate Gus's hair, ripped it from his scalp like grass, and my God, if I never see another big-bellied man wrapped in a toga.
Travelers keep journals, Nicholas explained in a low voice, noting the times and dates of when they move through the passages, to avoid crossing paths with themselves by accident.
Etta nodded, her fingers pressed tightly against the leather, but her mind spun. What did that mean, crossing paths with yourself? Why would they need to avoid it?
Stand up straight, child. You'll give yourself a hunchback before you're even an adult. My God.
Instead, Etta began to pace. Her mother went missing, or ran away. The realization ripped her down the center. Her mother had run away. She'd run away from an overbearing foster father, one who'd tried to control her life. Etta turned, studying the old man from under her lashes. The remaining members of the other family lines had been adopted into the Ironwood clan. What if that's what her mom had really meant? If, after her grandfather died, she'd been forced to become an Ironwood.
I, too, looked for her, Cyrus said, pulling the leather satchel up from the floor. He thumbed through the bag, finally plucking out a piece of parchment and thrusting it at Etta. She took the parchment and carefully unfolded it. Inside, the handwriting was unfamiliar. "January 2nd, our year 1099. Gus, I'm about to make my report to Father, and yes, gladly receive the punishment, but I've been battling my conscience over whether or not to tell you this. I've kept a brave face about it, but I know it's been a considerable source of pain for you over the years. Surely knowing is better than living the rest of your life with the uncertainty hanging over you. These are the questions I've sat with for days now. Earlier this week, I found a passage near to where I was staying in Nassau. And, well, chap, the truth of it is that I was bored and more than a little resentful at being called back again to 1776. Why must I follow every absurd lead in this never-ending quest to find this blasted obsession of his? So I heard it, and I went. And you can imagine my surprise when the passage put me out well past 1946, into what looked to be some kind of museum. I'll spare you the rather vulgar actions of the people around me, and say that, upon checking a newspaper, I realized I was in Manhattan in 2015. Yes, you read that correctly. It was an absolute crush of humanity all around, and the amount of building that's been done to the island is startling. You'll see for yourself soon, I believe. But here is where I hesitate again. Will you hate me for this? I can't be sure, knowing how one sight of her in Paris tormented you for years. Gus, I read through the newspaper trying to get a sense of what was happening in the world. Better to butter up the old man with it, right? But in one section I saw a photo that nearly stopped my breath, because I thought with all certainty it was our Rosie. Instead, it was a girl named Henrietta Spencer. She's a violin virtuoso, and the article was about a competition she'd just won in Russia. I skimmed it to the end, and sure enough, there was mention of a mother, a Rose Spencer. The technology of this time is remarkable, but I haven't the space here to tell you of it. A librarian at the city's public library helped me search for more information on something called the interweb, maybe? No, internet. In any case, it was easy enough to continue on my own, and I felt I owed it to you to chase this down the rabbit hole. The earliest record I could find of them was a police report on October 5th, 1998, stating that a young woman, a Rose Spencer, along with her three-month-old, had been picked up for theft in some sort of department store. In it, Rose said she was new to the city and was hoping to contact a friend. "I hope I haven't upset you, brother. I know you've built yourself a life, and you've Amelia and Julian to content yourself with. But I also hope that this helps you put it all to rest, and eases your bedeviled mind. Both Rosie and her daughter seem well enough, and despite the pain she's caused this family, I felt content to see them settled. Virgil."
"Virgil was my other son, gone shortly after this letter was sent," Cyrus explained, snatching it back out of her numb fingers. "Augustus a year later, when his ship sank in the 17th century."
Nicholas swung his gaze back to the old man, and edged to his voice.
"Enough of this. Tell her straight what you need of her."
Cyrus leaned back, giving him a long look.
"I could not use Rose, therefore my task falls upon Miss Linden."
"Spencer," she corrected sharply.
"Linden," he practically roared. "And damn you for it. I need you to steal back what was stolen from me by your mother."
That put a stop to the scalding words she was about to fling onto him. "Excuse me?"
"Don't play deaf. I haven't the patience for it. I meant precisely what I said earlier. If you continue to be uncooperative, I'll resume the search for it myself, and you'll be left here. I'm sure you saw the women as you came off the ferry, the ones who linger by the docks."
Nicholas growled.
"You dare imply—" "I imply nothing. I mean precisely what I say. That will be your own recourse for survival. What, without any skills or knowledge or protector in this time, will you do otherwise?"
So, her choices were to prostitute herself to others, or to serve him. "I know where the passage is," roughly. "All I need is to get back to Nassau. I would bury the passage before I ever let you get through it again, child, so think twice before you spite me. Let's play a game, shall we? Close your eyes and try to envision a scenario in which you could possibly get to the island before my men. What funds would you use? What friends do you have here who would help you? Cyrus asked, his voice light, like he was speaking to a child. And what would prevent us from coming to claim you again?
Nicholas would help me. Etta risked a glance over to him, feeling the air vibrate around the two of them with unspoken fury.
What would prevent us from killing your mother?
She sat back on her heels, defeat rising up in her like a wave of nausea. When she spoke, her words were sharp enough to draw Nicholas a step closer to her side. Etta wondered if he was worried he'd need to grab her again to keep her from clawing the old man's face. You already have one life on your hands. Are you really so evil that you'd kill another woman?
Another woman? He asked, brows raising. My agents didn't report a casualty, though they were authorized to, shall we say, use force and their best judgment.
Fury blazed in her. She was innocent. She was a defenseless elderly woman. Cyrus shrugged one shoulder.
Then she was already at the end of her life. Don't waste tears on this woman. Most don't get such a full life. My son, for instance. My grandson. I'm far more concerned with the blood your mother has on her hands. By our older traveler laws, I'd be more than justified in killing you to end this feud. Be grateful I've chosen the high road.
Etta was so stunned, so tackled by disbelief, her next words flew out of her mind. Clearly seeing this, Cyrus continued as if she hadn't spoken at all.
After the passage was discovered, I sent numerous agents to your filthy, crowded city to conduct their investigations. When it became clear Rose had borne a child, and one that might possibly be gifted, arrangements were made to put you directly in a position to travel.
Ironwood continued, lacing his fingers together over his chest.
My agents bestowed a rather sizable donation on my behalf to the museum that employs your mother. They suggested that the museum might invite you to perform. Of course, anything is possible when money is being passed beneath the table.
She felt her lip curl into a snarl, but she forced herself to stay silent, too afraid of crossing that line between cooperative and uncooperative.
It occurred to me that perhaps your mother didn't realize the passage was there, that she hadn't heard it. Or perhaps you didn't carry the ability. And so Sophia was sent, to see if you could hear the passage, and if so, bring you through it.
Hear? He knew she'd heard something. But Etta had been inside the museum any number of times, and that night was the first time she ever heard that booming call.
How very thoughtless of Rose not to explain this.
Cyrus seemed to read her thoughts before she did.
Our ancestors, those who created the passages 1,000 years ago, were of purer blood than those of us today. It became necessary to mingle our bloodlines with common ones in order to survive. The ability to hear and see the passages naturally has faded. We rely on resonance.
Cyrus slid a harmonica out of a velvet sack in his satchel. Putting his lips to the mouthpiece, he released a powerful burst of air, playing 3 simultaneous notes. Before he'd pulled the harmonica away, Etta heard it, the shuddering, distant scream. She pulled back instinctively, reaching out to grab something, anything, until her hand found the fireplace mantelpiece. The noise pounded like a second heartbeat in her head.
"The passages resonate with the chord of G major," Cyrus said.
Etta rubbed her forehead, trying to dislodge the knot of pain behind her temple, the blazing wildfire of sound trapped there. The Largo from Sonata No. 3, the one chosen for her, that contained those 3 notes, G, B, and D, only a few seconds into the piece. She'd called the passage with her violin, and it had called back.
"How curious," Cyrus began.
There was a cane leaning against the left arm of the chair, and he took it in hand as he rose to his feet, thudding toward her in 3 beats of sound.
"How very curious that your mother kept this from you. How curious that she ran away from you, she said sarcastically. I can't imagine why.
His hand lashed out, gripping her chin, stilling her. The pressure of his grip, combined with her own shock, made her arms go limp at her side. He was taller than Etta was, but otherwise built with the solid stockiness of a bulldog, and his quiet cruelty took a very different form when he was towering over her. For a half second, with the fire scorching her back, she honestly thought he'd push her into it.
"Stop this," Nicholas said sharply, thrusting an arm between them. A small protest, but it did something. The blue flame of his eyes shifted from Etta to Nicholas, and she felt his hand relax, slide down the length of her neck before settling there like a collar, a noose.
"Your mother ingratiated herself to my family as we searched for an item of value that once belonged to my ancestors. She played the part of the sad, sorry orphan, gathered what information she needed from us, and stole it from under our noses. Decades of searching, wasted."
"I have never stolen anything in my life." Her mother had only just said those words to her when Etta had joked about her stealing the earrings. She'd seemed almost devastated by an accusation that hadn't been an accusation at all. No matter how bad things got, or how much I wanted something. Nicholas straightened, his expression sharpening as something came together for him.
"You're speaking of the astrolabe. You mean to imply that Rose Linden is the traveler who stole it?" "I imply nothing. It is a statement of fact, one you were not privy to in your position."
Cyrus blew a sharp breath out from his nose.
"I'd heard various reports of errors and places where she'd hidden it, but it all added up to nothing but further loss."
He turned his back to her.
"The search to reclaim this object has cost me 2 sons and a grandson, all 3 of my direct heirs."
"Then maybe," Etta bit out, "you should have stopped looking for it while you were still ahead, and left me out of this." He removed his hand from her and pulled it back, as if to strike her. Nicholas stepped farther between them, his shoulder blocking her view of the old man.
"Enough. Don't pretend as if you've actually been mourning them. I seem to recall you referring to Julian as a gnat on more than one occasion. He didn't shed a single tear when he died."
Something occurred to Etta. If Augustus and Virgil were his sons, and Julian was his grandson, where did Nicholas fit into the family tree?
"Did Sophia search their possessions while she was in that time period?" Nicholas asked. "How do you know it's not there?" "Rose knows better than to keep it with her. She will have guaranteed that finding her does not mean finding the astrolabe. She always was a spiteful creature, even after everything I'd done for her," Cyrus continued. "She claimed it belonged to the Linden family, but nothing could be further from the truth."
"Someone tried to pull a fast one on me once, and I've never forgotten what it felt like. I almost lost something of your granddad's." Etta forced herself to stay as still as possible, terrified of giving these thoughts away too.
"One of my agents conducted a thorough search of their abode a few months ago," Cyrus said. "If such a place may even be called that. By his description, it was a closet."
"Your agent?" Etta felt the blood leave her face, drain slowly from her heart, until it seemed to stop beating altogether. "Your agent broke into our apartment and went through our things."
"And several safe deposit boxes he traced all over Manhattan. He returned with a peculiar letter that was of great interest to me, and I sent him and the others back to continue their investigation of you."
"A peculiar letter?" Etta's brows furrowed. "What did that mean?" The old man continued.
"They were to assist Sophia, if necessary, in prompting your travel, as well as restrain your mother."
He touched his pocket, where he'd returned the photograph of her mom.
"They await my command as to what to do with her. Do you understand?"
Etta forced herself to give a curt nod. "What's so special about this astrolabe that you couldn't just find yourself another one?" Etta only knew what an astrolabe was from her many tours through the Met with Alice and Rose. Larger than a compass, the instruments had been used in ancient and medieval times for astronomical, astrological, and topographical calculations, even to tell time. The lowermost layer, the one that cupped the smaller round plates that moved inside, was divided into the hours of the day and degrees of arc. The plates were etched with latitudes, altitudes, even parts of the celestial sphere. But apparently this one also had another purpose.
It can examine a passage and inform the bearer of the destination and time period on the other side by reading its vibrations, Cyrus said. And whether or not the passage is stable enough to enter without collapsing.
She turned to Nicholas, looking for confirmation. He kept his gaze on the snapping, shuddering fire as he explained.
When a traveler dies, a surge of power is released. The nearest passage is rendered unstable by it, and will often close. But if it collapses while you're traveling through it, you could be tossed out to a random time, or be trapped in the passage forever.
Etta felt a shudder work over her skin.
There are hundreds of passages we use, but there are many more uncharted ones. Our numbers as travelers are dwindling, Cyrus continued. Every time I send a traveler through, I risk him or her never returning, stumbling onto a battlefield, being caught unawares in the wild, or by the ruling authority. Can your little mind possibly fathom the importance of finding the astrolabe to save them from that fate? Allow me to put this plainly. Our numbers grow fewer and fewer. Think of all those travelers who are stranded in the future, who do not know what it is they can do and who they are meant to serve. Their family requires their assistance, and by blood or by conquest, they owe me their allegiance.
The prickling started at the base of Etta's spine and worked its way up over her scalp. Is that what this was really about? Her mother had taken it to save future travelers from being under his thumb. If I found it, and if I handed it over. Rose had wanted to protect the travelers, but if Etta knew her mother, it was more than that. Lineage could be hidden, names changed, people relocated, until they were lost to the records of time. "Wouldn't giving it to you change my future?" Etta asked, the thought suddenly occurring to her. "Or erase it completely?" He raised his brows, as if surprised she'd even know to ask.
"Your future will be preserved. The investments I've made over the centuries depend on it. I merely mean to protect and find my own kin." "Then why not convince Rose to tell you, and leave Miss Spencer out of this?" Nicholas asked. "Trade her daughter for the location." "Don't be stupid, boy," Cyrus said. "The woman would die before giving the location up, and in the process lie and send members of this family off to every dangerous hell on this earth to retrieve it. We cannot sustain such losses. Therefore, Miss Linden is the perfect candidate for retrieval. She is a blank slate. And should she perish, she will have at least deciphered this for us to use."
A folded sheet of notebook paper emerged from the same pocket of his robe, and he handed it to Etta with a look of keen interest.
"My agent uncovered this in your home. I believe there's a manner of reading it that's peculiar to your family, and that the clues themselves pertain to the Lindens. I've only been able to pull a single thread from it."
The letter itself, which began with "Dear Etta, my sweet little star," was gibberish. The phrases themselves made sense. There were complete thoughts, like, "The trees look lovely today." But that was followed by, "Ask yourself if unknown gods exist." There was no meaning behind the words, no sense to the composition of it. With a sickening jolt, Etta knew exactly what she was looking at. She knew exactly how to read this letter, because her mom had been coding letters and messages for her this way for years. There was no second sheet to layer over it. Sometimes her mom didn't have time to cut out the shape, in which case she'd use the clue in the first few lines. "Dear Etta, my sweet little star." While that was a nice sentiment, her mother had never called her something so sentimental in her entire life. Which meant, then, tracing a star over the letter would reveal the full message. "She wrote this for me. Only her. Etta can handle this." Etta kept her eyes on the page until she was sure she wouldn't give herself away. Cyrus had managed to extract one meaningful phrase from the jumble of words, but the rest of it was lost to him. He didn't know there was a key to bring the nonsense together, tie it together into the message buried beneath. Tracing a star over the letter would give her the rest of the phrases she'd need. It was only bad luck that he'd been able to pull any line out of it, and recognize its connection to the Lindens. She wants me to find the astrolabe. She doesn't want anyone else to. This was what she'd meant when she'd said it was Etta's time, wasn't it? Rose didn't just know she would travel back in time at one point. She knew she would one day travel back for this purpose, and if Etta had to guess, because Ironwood had willed it.
"As you can see, it was written for you to find. The fourth line down," he said.
There was a single phrase underlined, the words spread out across one line, where, if Etta had to guess, the whitest part of the star would be.
"Tell tyrants to you their allegiance they owe. That is the one that interests me."
"What about it?" she asked, all innocence.
"It is a famous song in this period about the execution of Nathan Hale, the American spy," Cyrus explained. "After a time, I finally placed where I had heard the phrase."
"Nathan Hale? The, I only regret that I have but one life to lose for my country, Nathan Hale." He had been an American spy caught behind enemy lines during the Revolution, and was hanged for it.
"I'd prefer you not reveal," Nicholas began. "How positively adorable that you think I care a whit for your preferences," Cyrus snapped. "I recognized it, in fact, because Benjamin Linden was annoyingly fond of singing it when he was deep into his cups. Surely it couldn't be a coincidence, given its connection to her only family. But imagine my surprise when I discovered that history didn't have a record of the exact site of his execution. I had to make my way here to determine it for myself. And lo, there was a previously unknown passage waiting just across the way. It is my belief that there are clues within this letter that will lead from one passage to another, connecting in a trail that culminates at the correct location and era where the astrolabe may be found."
In other words, each clue pointed to the location of a passage that would need to be taken in order to find it. Sort of like connecting flights in order to arrive at a desired destination. Only she needed to find the right planes. Etta forced herself to swallow, to keep her expression neutral, as she ran her fingers over her mother's journal. Ironwood caught the movement and pulled the journal out of her hands, tucking it back under his arm.
"Tomorrow is Hale's execution," Cyrus said. "We've had to wait months and come to 1776 Manhattan ourselves to search for the exact spot, as history remained uncertain about the actual location of the event. As you've hopefully ascertained, the hanging will take place across the way, in the Royal Artillery Park."
The passage was still moaning, still screaming, but the wind seemed to be carrying the sound away until all that remained was a faint drumming. "You're not going to do anything about it?" Etta asked. "Try to save him." Cyrus burst out laughing.
"Interfere? Change the timeline? I think not. The fool got himself caught, out of uniform, behind enemy lines. His death is on his head."
The attitude was disgusting.
"You'll decipher this letter before you set off to hunt for the astrolabe. We may even be able to prepare you with the right clothing and mannerisms before you begin."
Nicholas straightened.
"A few hours of tutelage won't do anything for her."
That pricked at his pride. Wasn't she handling this all fairly well, given the circumstances? And not to be competitive about this, but if he could master the ins and outs of traveling, then so could she. He must have read the fire in her expression, because Nicholas's eyes widened slightly.
"I only meant..." "She'll be fine," Cyrus interrupted. "I've waited long enough. Here are my terms, Miss Linden. Decipher this letter and the clues it contains about where to find the necessary passages to connect through. Travel through them, and bring the astrolabe back to me. Then your mother will be freed, and you'll be returned to your home."
Etta held his gaze for as long as she could stand it. Exhaustion bled into her, and the weight of her thoughts began to feel like too much to carry. She worked through the necessary points as quickly as she could. Cyrus would not reveal the location of the passage back to the Met, and her time, if she didn't do as he asked. And maybe not even then. Which might mean never saving Alice's life. Nicholas would not necessarily take her back, as her life was not technically in danger. Her mother had lied to her, reshaping the truth, omitting huge chunks of the rest, inserting little riddles and clues into her life for Etta to maybe piece together one day as she tried to fend for herself. Which, wonderful parenting right there. And all to keep this astrolabe in the family. To give it another protector who would find it and hide it again if any other traveler should stumble upon it. Then why not train her, prepare her for this, so it wasn't so overwhelming, so impossible? No wonder Alice had argued she wasn't ready. She wasn't. But her mom believed she could do this, and she wasn't about to let either of them down. Etta closed her eyes, breathing in deeply through her nose, until her heart calmed to a steady roll of thunder in her ears. Home. Alice. Mom. And soon enough, her debut. All of those things waiting for her. Was there a way to rewrite Alice's fate, to make sure her mother was safe, to not give the old man what he wanted, but still save her life?
"You cannot be considering this," Nicholas said incredulously. "Think, Miss Spencer. This is no simple task he's asking of you."
"I do not recall asking you to weigh in with your opinion," Cyrus thundered.
"What is there to consider?" Etta asked coldly, looking directly at the old man. "You'll kill her if I don't bring it back, won't you?" He smirked.
"With pleasure. You should know that you'll need to return no later than September 30th. If not, the deal is void."
"The 30th? As in 9 days away? No, 8.
"That's not nearly enough time," Nicholas cried. "Julia and I spent years searching. What does it matter if it takes her 18 days instead of 8? What's a few more days when you have the whole of time at your fingertips?"
"My reasons are my own," Cyrus said. "She will return by the 30th, or she will lose everything."
Etta folded her hands in front of her, choking off the supply of blood to her fingers. Being made to work for the man who'd hurt her mother, who'd invaded their lives and stolen Alice's. Etta felt sick. "What do I do?" The answer came to her, ruthless and simple, a blade that sliced through her doubts. Find the astrolabe, use it to find the passage in Nassau, and go find her mother. All without Cyrus Ironwood catching on to what she was doing. She and Rose could go back and save Alice, and then disappear. And what kind of life would that be? One without a spotlight, playing the violin professionally. Everything she'd worked for would be sacrificed, to stay hidden. But if Alice and her mom were safe, it would be worth it.
"I'll do it," Etta said, pushing through the uneasiness. Then, with a desperate hope Cyrus wouldn't sniff out the lie, added,
"It might take me some time to figure out how she coded the letter. I'll need more than tonight."
She'd need less than 2 minutes, but that wasn't for him to know, was it?
Nicholas shook his head, muttering something beneath his breath as he swung away from her, bracing an arm against the fireplace's mantelpiece.
"Excellent," Cyrus said, clapping his hands together. "You may keep the original copy to decipher, and you will resume in the morning. You and Sophia will share the room beside mine."
Etta didn't fight her grimace. After the electric, hissing fury she'd seen on the girl's face when she'd been sent out, sleeping on the roof during a thunderstorm would be safer. Realizing she'd been dismissed, she turned toward the door.
"Miss Linden,"
Cyrus called, just as her hand gripped the knob.
"Know that I have a copy of that letter, should you try to destroy it. Know, too, that it is unwise to test me."
"I understand," Etta said. "But I'm not afraid of you." The noise from the tavern floated up to her on a cloud of tobacco smoke, leather, and wet dog. Just before she closed the door, she took one final look at Nicholas's profile as he stared into the glowing fire, despondent. That would have to be enough. As soon as the tavern cleared out and its occupants wound themselves down to sleep, she would follow the lingering rattle of the passage to its entrance, the way she had in the Met. For the first time in days, she felt in control of her life again, not just an unwilling passenger at someone else's mercy. A hand latched onto her arm, wheeling her around. The man posted on guard raised a single black brow as Sophia hauled her the last few steps toward the next door down the hall. Once inside, she shut it gently behind them and went to stand beside the wall separating the bedchamber from the old man's. Cyrus Ironwood had drained what last bit of patience she'd had, and exhaustion was making her head throb as she surveyed the cramped room. This again? Maybe this was the old man's real punishment for what her mom had done, keeping her trapped in confined quarters with a furious Sophia, forced to listen to all of her rantings without strangling her. The frustration that choked her was so real, she felt her hands curl over the back of a frail-looking chair, and seriously considered smashing it against the nearby wall. "What are you even doing?" she asked. But Sophia only held up a hand and pressed her ear to the wall. "I can't hear them," she said quietly. "So hopefully they won't hear us." She sat down on the bed in a flounce of skirts, seething. "The nerve of them! Making me look like a fool, shutting me out, after I was the one who retrieved you. How dare they keep this from me?" "From you?" Etta asked pointedly. "Yes, from me," she said, tearing the pins out of her hair. A trunk had been left in the room, filled to the brim with cloth, glass bottles, and a silver brush. Sophia yanked the latter through her loose hair, tearing at it fiercely. The old man was as pleasant as an enraged cat. If Etta had been in Sophia's shoes, she would have welcomed the opportunity to spend as little time with him as possible. The man had forced Sophia to serve him, had basically barred her from going to any year that might have gifted a woman with a few real rights. Etta had to wonder how much better Sophia's life might be if she wasn't under Grandfather Dearest's unyielding thumb. "Why did you even want to be in there?" Etta asked. "If it bothered you that much that he didn't tell you why he wanted me, couldn't you have argued to stay?" Sophia scoffed. "No one fights with Grandfather. Just ask the other families. They'll tell you firsthand what you get for ignoring his wishes." Etta considered the situation, moving slowly to sit beside her. The girl was fuming, blowing out one harsh breath after another, and Etta couldn't tell her anger from her humiliation. "Tell me exactly what they said," Sophia demanded. Etta did, mostly. She kept the coded letter from her mother pressed against her gown's heavy skirts, out of the other girl's sights. "The astrolabe," Sophia repeated with disbelief. "He's still looking for it after everything that happened." "Do you know anything else about it?" Etta asked carefully. Sophia let out a humorless little laugh. "Of course not. Why would they tell me anything about it? You'll have to ask your friend, Mr. Carter. He and Julian were sent out to look for it 4 years ago." The mysterious Julian again. "Cyrus's grandson, right?" Etta pressed. "He's..." Sophia began. "He's dead. He was the heir after his father got himself drowned, and his uncle managed to shoot himself in a hunting accident." She ran a hand back through her thick, dark hair, her doll-like face bleak and empty. "He was my intended." "Intended? As in, you were engaged?" Despite everything, Etta felt a rush of sympathy. She fumbled for a way to cool her emotions, regain some of the distance she felt toward the other girl. "From the time we were children," Sophia said. "It was a perfect match. Do you know how rare it is for travelers to be able to marry each other? It was only because I was born to a distant cousin. It was my..." "Your what?" Sophia prompted. The way Sophia said it, barely catching herself, made her wonder if maybe the other girl did want to talk about this, if there was no one else she could discuss it with. "My father was no one in this family," Sophia said, raking a hand through the ends of her hair. "A distant cousin of Grandfather's, who forced himself on some unsuspecting harlot and came back for seconds, only to find the woman dead and me all alone. He drank himself to death a few years later, and only Grandfather was willing to raise me. Said he couldn't allow a true traveler to slip through the cracks. Most people only have one shadow, but I feel as though I have two. My past trails me every day, every second, and I can't shake it off. Marrying Julian might have finally stopped the whispers from the other travelers. It might have finally earned me a measure of respect. Marrying up was the only way that any number of women in history had escaped their pasts and whatever stations they'd been born into. They couldn't work to improve their lives the way men did, and live by their own means. It was grossly unfair to them, and it was especially unfair that Sophia, someone who should have had a future, access to opportunities, was trapped inside of this cage the family had thrown over her. Etta finally released her last trace of anger and pressed a hand to her forehead, trying to process this. Sophia pushed herself up onto her feet and began to tug at the strings of her stays and gown. After a moment, Etta stood to help her. "If you are related to the old man, and there are so few travelers left, why aren't you Cyrus's heir?" Sophia rolled her eyes. "Because an infant born a few months ago, who so distantly related to grandfather as to only share a drop of blood, somehow that child is more eligible, simply by virtue of having been born a boy. Little Marcus Ironwood is the heir. For now. I'll have to wait until he's old enough for everyone to discern whether he's a traveler or a guardian. If it's the latter, well, perhaps grandfather will be desperate enough to reconsider the rule." "That's ridiculous," Etta said. The idea of Sophia leading the family and subjecting them to her will was mildly terrifying, but she could hardly be worse than the old man. She was ambitious, and Etta still wasn't convinced she had been an innocent party to Alice's death. But Sophia shouldn't have been denied simply for being a girl. No woman should. "That's..." Sophia cut herself off, surprised. "You agree. It's simply the way it's done, and has been done forever. But the older cousins renounce their claim by marrying outside of grandfather's wishes. I'm the only one of my generation tied closely enough to his bloodline to have a true claim, and I'm certainly the only traveler left alive who's been under his direct tutelage." "Maybe it really is time for a change, then," Etta said. "Can you make your case?" "Women are not allowed to attend the family meetings, so how can I? How can I get grandfather to see what's been in front of him all along?" Sophia shook her head. "How do you fight against a mountain? How do you move it when you don't even have a shovel?" "Maybe you don't have to move it," Etta said, folding the gown over the lid of the trunk. "Maybe you have to climb it." Sophia studied her, her face still flushed from the heat of her words. "I don't know if there ever will be a better choice than Julian. He was perfect." "No one is perfect. Not even you." The other girl snorted, climbing into bed and shifting so she faced the far wall, making room for Etta. After a moment's hesitation, Etta climbed in after her, scooting as far as she could to the edge without falling off. The mattress felt strange, like it had been stuffed with straw. It smelled that way, too. The frame creaked, but there was another sound beneath it, the rope supporting the mattress. They scraped against each other, and sounded like the lion's head on the ship when the men were adjusting the sails. Her mind shifted back to Nicholas, wondering where he'd sleep. Sophia leaned over her, blowing out the candle on the bedside table. The smoke trailed out into the darkness like a silver chain. "Was Augustus Nicholas's father?" Etta whispered into the night. "Yes." The whole bed shifted as Sophia turned over. The silence stretched out for a few beats, punctuated only by her sigh. "I don't know much about this, truthfully. Most of it is gossip. But Augustus was madly, madly in love with Rose, your mother. Everyone knew it, just like they all knew that he wasn't the same after she disappeared. He was... troubled." "What had the letter said? But I also hope that this helps you put it all to rest and eases your bedeviled mind." "He spent years searching for her, even after grandfather tried to force him to stop. Eventually he had to do his duty and provide an heir, so he married, and Julian came into the picture. But Augustus was not pleasant, never faithful, never loving, an absolute beast. He took what he wanted from whomever he wanted. Do you understand?" Etta understood. Nicholas's mother had been the family slave, and Augustus had assaulted her, abused her, and in the end had never freed her. Etta's fury spouted a new head, this one with knives for teeth. She thought just then that she could tear down the walls of the inn with only her bare hands.
"Julian wasn't like that," Sophia continued softly.
"Not at all.
He was kind."
"Did you love him?" Etta asked. There was a careful reservation in Sophia's voice when she spoke about him. Either the grief was still too new and intense to touch, or there hadn't been a great, smoldering kind of love between them.
"I was content," Sophia said. "He deserved to live, not the bastard. It's Nicholas's fault Julian died, you know, and he readily admits it. Like that could somehow absolve him of some of the guilt. They never should have taken that path through the Himalayas, not in the rainy season. He was there to take care of Julian, to see to his needs, to keep him from harm, to sacrifice his life if need be. He should have forced them to turn around and take a different route."
Etta turned over to face her, almost too afraid to ask. Nicholas had stopped traveling for a reason. He'd implied he was trapped in this era, and she had a feeling she was on the verge of finding out why.
"What happened?"
"They were going to search the Taksang Palphag Monastery for something Grandfather wanted."
"The astrolabe?" Etta wondered.
Nicholas hadn't seemed surprised to hear of it.
"The monastery is high in the mountains, built into a cliff with sheer walls. If you believe the rat story, there was a storm and Julian slipped and fell. How could they have been standing so close to one another, and Nicholas not have been able to catch him?"
"Oh my God," Etta whispered. Sophia turned to face the wall, the column of her spine rigid.
"One brother lived, one brother died. And if you ask me, he did it on purpose."
Etta felt her jaw set as she hugged her arms over her stomach. Why would he ever do that? Julian was his half-brother. And more than that, Nicholas is honorable.
"What good is honor when greed eats away at its foundations?" Sophia continued.
"You're right, though. It all comes down to the blood they shared between them. With Julian out of the picture, he had the next best claim. He is in Grandfather's direct bloodline."
"No," Etta whispered, closing her eyes at the image.
"Not him." The thought ate away at her picture of him, dissolving it completely. He was her anchor here, the one reliable person who she could count on for the truth, for decency. She couldn't let Sophia take that away from her, too. Not until she'd heard Nicholas's side of this.
"No way."
"And you want to know what the truly sad thing is, Etta?" Sophia whispered. "If he'd asked, if he'd put his case forward, Grandfather would have considered it. I know he would have. Because being born a bastard in this family is still preferable to being born a girl."
"Leave, Sophia," Etta urged. "Run away if you have to. If there's really nothing you can do to fix things in this family, get out the way my mom did and start over."
It was a long while before the answer drifted back to her.
"If I'm not an Ironwood, then I am no one," Sophia said in a thin voice. "And I have nothing."
"That's not true," Etta said, shocked by the defeat in the girl's voice. But only the passage answered back, in a rolling murmur. A growling whisper of lies. One that spoke of freedom, of discovery, of reclaiming what was lost, but delivered only a cage of lies and disappointment.
10.
Nicholas cast his gaze toward the fire, watching the dance of light. He'd felt the weight of Etta's eyes on him, but had kept still until the door shut behind her. And he heard the wet rattle of Cyrus's breath as he moved toward the bedside table to light a candle. Nicholas watched the steady movement of his fingers as they ran over the gold frame of a small, oval-shaped portrait he'd seen many times before. His first wife, Minerva. Not his second, the sorry shrew of a woman who'd borne him 2 sons and died in the process of giving him yet another. Not Augustus, nor Virgil, whom he clearly had no desire to honor even in memory. Not even Julian, who'd done everything the man had ever asked of him, superbly and without question. A love match by all accounts, and with another traveler. For Cyrus there was only Minerva, with her golden hair, green eyes, and uncommon beauty. A true Helen of Troy. When they'd wed, Cyrus had been at the center of a conspiracy to control the traveler's fates.
He had hidden her, but it had not saved her in the end. And when Cyrus's rival, Roman Jacaranda, murdered the woman, the four families had been flung into all-out war, and the last vestiges of the man's humanity were torn away. Julian had told him stories of the old man's vengeful rampage, harrowing tales of how he'd outmaneuvered all of his enemies, until he alone had become the Grand Master, ruling over all of their descendants. None of it would bring Minerva back. His rivals had been strategic, choosing a rare year to which no passage led, so that Cyrus could not return to her hiding place and intervene. He could not travel to the years leading up to it and wait out the days, not without crossing paths with himself, nor could he warn anyone, or even himself, in sufficient time, without altering his future control of the other families. And, Nicholas thought, that was really all one had to know about the man. He wouldn't shatter the sanctity of his rules, and he would not compromise his position or riches, not even for a woman whose memory continued to haunt him. Cyrus Ironwood's heart had hardened into flint, capable only of being sparked into fiery anger. It allowed him to scheme without mercy, to steal a young woman from her home, thrust her into a decades-long search that amounted to little more than madness.
"You cannot be serious with this request," Nicholas ground out. Fighting the urge to clench his jaw, he added. "She could lose her life. You're asking her to take a number of enormous risks, with only your word that she'll be returned to her home."
Etta of the 21st century. Etta of the distant, unforeseeable future. Etta with the pirate heart. This astrolabe had already cost 3 lives, and now he was demanding that she sacrifice hers as well. Cyrus eyed him.
"Has she proved herself to be spectacularly unsuited to this task? She has the motivation and the means to see this through, and she won't run the risk of crossing paths with herself, unlike almost every other traveler. I hardly require more beyond her discretion about our family, and that is easily maintained by notifying the guardians across time to watch for her appearances, to note her arrivals and departures through the passages."
Etta would think she was working independently, none the wiser that the old man was like the mythical Argus, eyes scattered across the whole body of time. Would it be better or worse, he wondered, for Rose to have used other uncharted and unknown passages aside from the one across the road in the Royal Artillery Park? She would be able to travel without the interference of guardians stationed nearby to watch the passages. But if something were to happen, if she were to become hurt, or worse, who could help her?
"This is a task for your family. Our family," Cyrus corrected.
This was a man who had hit him across the face so many times when he was a child that Nicholas had learned to listen for his voice and avoid his path entirely. Of course the spineless sop had never raised a hand to Augustus, his monster of a son, even as he terrorized everyone around him with his maliciousness.
"Julian was all you had in life, and still you sent him to his death."
Cyrus slammed his fist down on the table, and Nicholas jumped at the bang.
"I gave him to you to protect. I live with the consequences of your failure every day."
Hardly. Nicholas's bitterness turned inward until it frosted his heart. He often dreamed of it, the last look of trust on Julian's face, before the glove slipped off his hand, and he fell through the curtain of rain to the rocks below. The bursts of light reflected in the white haze, the cracking boom from the nearby passage, as it absorbed the surge of power that marked the end of a traveler's life. He dreamt of it in rushes of panic and ice, just as he thought Cyrus must only dream in fire and blood. The last time he'd stood before this man, he'd been weak with hunger and exhaustion, burdened by guilt. He'd been made to stand there for hours and report what had happened. Julian's death collapsed the passage they had taken to Bhutan, forcing Nicholas to use his brother's rambling travel journal to find another passage in that year to use, and connect to another one, and then another, until he finally found his way back to the year the old man was residing in. It had taken months, and even if he'd had the strength left in him, Nicholas hadn't had the heart to stop the words and fists that knocked him around until he was mute and suffocating on his apologies. He wouldn't be silent again.
"Miss Spencer is my passenger. I'm honor-bound to ensure her safety." "You're honor-bound to me," Cyrus reminded him. "And me alone." "I answer to no one but myself," Nicholas said sharply.
This man would not take him in again,
A snake could shed its skin, but never change its colors. The old man studied him, resting his hands on his knees.
When I heard the rumors that you possessed our ability, when I tracked you and Hall to the docks all those years ago, do you know what my first thought was upon seeing you?
Nicholas stiffened.
I thought you had the bearing of an ironwood, for all that you were a knob-kneed stick of a thing. I was impressed by how quickly you agreed to be trained and work beside Julian.
It was the greatest shame of Nicholas's life that he had given in to the wonder of what ironwood had offered. Adventure beyond reckoning, status beyond imagination, and...
You promised me compensation, and information on who had purchased my mother, he said flatly. You provided neither in the end.
4 years of his life, wasted. And when he'd been exiled to this, his natural time, as punishment for failing Cyrus and allowing Julian to die, he'd been cut to the bone with a second blow. By the time he'd discovered what had become of her on his own, his mother had died of fever, alone among strangers, as he and Julian had merrily drunk themselves into a stupor in 1921 New Orleans, chasing another fruitless lead for the astrolabe. The lingering call of the passage filled the silence between them, a low murmur beneath the fire's snaps and pops.
I warn you, Nicholas said. If you attempt to do the same to me now, deny me that which I've earned for bringing the ladies here, I'll kill you where you stand, and gladly be hanged for it.
Cyrus gave him an approving look that did little more than make his guts roll.
Your job is not yet finished, Samuel, he said. My name is Nicholas.
It was the name he had chosen for himself as a child, when the Halls had presented him with the opportunity to redraft his life into something of his own making. It was a name the old man had refused to use, even when he'd brought Nicholas back into the family years ago to serve Julian. Nicholas, the patron saint of sailors, repentant thieves, children. All of the things he was and could be. The name made him feel more than protected. It made him feel like he could be a protector. Naturally, the Ironwood saw it as yet another way that he had failed. Cyrus inclined his head.
You've pleased me thus far. I would like to raise the stakes some, if you are amenable.
Something about the words caught him, held him in place for an instant, before he managed to shake himself free.
Our business is concluded, Nicholas said firmly. I will meet with your man of business downstairs.
And figure out a way to untangle Etta from this.
That sum is hardly enough for you to buy your own ship, Cyrus said. Oh, yes, I am well aware of the reason you accepted this task. There's no need for surprise. I am pleased with your vision, your acumen. You remind me of myself.
Nicholas felt as though he'd overturned a bucket of boiling tar on his head.
I assure you, you and I are nothing alike.
Cyrus waved his hand again.
You're entirely right. I cannot send the child alone. Not only is she likely to give herself away and be killed, she is her mother's daughter, wily and cunning. I looked into her eyes and saw Rose Linden staring back. I won't be taken for a fool twice.
Nicholas wondered if he'd also seen the flicker of recognition in Etta's eyes, as the girl had looked over the letter. He'd sensed the rebellion rising in her, even as she'd agreed.
In addition to the original settlement, I will relinquish total control of my plantation holdings to you in this era, to do with as you please, Cyrus said. Free the slaves, sell the land, or continue as it stands. You'll fund not just a single ship, but a whole fleet of them.
Nicholas's whole body went tight, but he couldn't identify the source of the feeling. Was it hope or terror?
Why would you do such a thing? Sophia said that you had decided to stay in this era, that you were looking to purchase property, he said.
The Ironwoods earned income from several centuries, made investments, owned shares in lucrative companies. He knew this was merely a drop in the ocean of their wealth, but it came too freely offered. There would be shackles attached.
Sophia is not privy to my thoughts. I have no desire to stay in this era beyond waiting for the astrolabe to be brought back to me, Cyrus said,
surprising him with an actual explanation. Nicholas hesitated a moment before nodding for him to continue.
In exchange for what I've offered,
You will accompany the girl on her search. That girl has too much of her mother in her. She will try to abscond with it at some point. I will need you to ensure that she doesn't reveal herself as a traveler, or meddle with the timeline. And see that the astrolabe is returned to me. All without revealing my conditions to the girl. Should she become aware of our agreement, your contract will be destroyed.